and welcome back to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where, as always, we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. This week, you're joining us for the first episode of Season 3. Now, remember to follow and subscribe to us on your favourite listening platform, as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, in order to stay up to date and get some extra goodies. This week, we're heading to the mountains searching for medicinal honey in Thayan, so start climbing. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Save, and of course, hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Season 3 of Mez Explores. And before we unravel the complexities and the arduous process of the underdog's fight against a flawed system, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we contain spoilers. As Save said, we are looking at Thayan, which is a 2021 South Indian film written and directed by Ganesh Vinayak. Thayan stars Abhirami, Tarun Kumar, and Arul Das, just to name a few. So, without further ado, Sade, let's get straight into the film. What did you think?
On the whole, I actually quite liked this film. There was a couple of little things, like, you know, it unfortunately had dubbed audio, but for the most part, I actually didn't find that to be a majorly glaring issue in this episode, so I'm not going to complain about it. There was nice little touches about religion and superstition and social beliefs, and I think these all sort of came together really nicely, and it spoke to local and traditional traditions and beliefs. It was a nice juxtaposition to the outside world, which is obviously what this film was going for. And the mountain village was made to feel as though it was separate to the corrupt, consumeristic world below. It was as though they were the children of gods, which the scum of humanity wanted to bring down to their level, if for no other reason than their own arrogance. And this film touched on so many different themes about caste and poverty and consumerism and the environment, and I think for the most part this film did it quite well. There were some things which I thought it could have done better, and there was a few surprises for me where I thought the film would go somewhere that it didn't. But on the whole, I think this is a very nicely put together and visually very beautiful film.
Say, I know how much you hate dubbing in South Indian films, so I'm actually glad you could look past this. And I almost wondered, is it because the viewer was distracted with the serene surrounds and the socially piercing dialogue? But I feel like I'm digressing here. This film did have an interesting concept and a very powerful third act. As a viewer, you feel the anxiety and the frustration increasing as the viewer and the character both embark on the journey of getting Viola's documents. As he reaches each department and gets slugged with mind-numbing excuses not to aid and assist, it actually demonstrates not only the fragmented setup of the civil service in India, but also how dishonorable the staff are. They value personal egos and gripes over the oath that they took to be a servant of the public. Now, this narrative is loosely based on a similar incident that's actually occurred in a few places in India, and this is where the director has drawn his inspiration from. And at the times of these real incidences, when the government was actually criticized by the public and the media, and their response was that this was only a certain group of bad officials and this doesn't represent the entire government. I feel like such a lackluster response is not only insulting to those involved, but it's actually diminishing to the entire nation. And this only perpetuates what I was saying prior. When you have a fragmented structure, it only perpetuates dysfunction. And in a society, bureaucratic dysfunction can only be attributed to those who govern.
And I think further to this, given this is a thematic expression I think I've seen in almost every single Indian film we've seen to date, it suggests this isn't a rare occurrence in India, but is a major systemic social issue afflicting tens of millions of people in India on a daily basis. And I think these sorts of social commentaries don't make it to such a mainstream extent in things such as film, unless it is a mainstream issue in the society being portrayed.
Look, I'm so glad you mentioned the reference of bringing down the villagers to levels of the corrupt, and I actually missed that connotation altogether. But to reiterate the point that you made before about the traditions that these villagers were steeped in, I think it's a poignant juxtaposition. As someone who isn't really superstitious myself, I found it hard to relate to the banana leaf ritual. Like, how can you determine your entire life decisions based on a leaf? Look, I'm not mocking cultures and traditions, but it's just sad for me to know how many relationships have missed the chance of flourishing just purely because of these traditions. Even if Poonkoti didn't marry Velu, the probability of her dying due to lead poisoning is actually immense. And the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation estimated that in 2017, lead exposure accounted for 1.06 million deaths worldwide. And Jennifer Muller Garland from the Circle of Blue publications actually suggests that the supply of clean fresh water to produce food is actually diminishing in India. Rivers and lakes are profoundly polluted, and this is actually according to state and government studies done in India. There are 70% of the country's fresh water, and this includes in the ground and on the surface, is also contaminated.
Yes, well, my stance on this is pretty hardline, and that's that the ratio of problems with humanity increase or decrease proportional to the size of the population, and therein lies the issue facing the world on the whole, but let's not stray too far down that path.
Look, that is a bit of a Pandora's box save, and I'm sure there'll be another film that tackles that specific concept, so let's leave it for that. But at the nucleus of this film is the central theme of an emerging civilization versus the natural surrounding world. Now, Ganesh Vinayak makes a potent argument for the conservation of our natural world and the subtext the global and societal impacts of ignoring these warnings will have. But there are some critics that argue that the film is missing nuance and depth. And I'm sort of torn, Save, because even though there is a part of me that agrees with this, a larger portion actually will have to respectfully disagree. Ashutosh Mohan from Field Companion actually argues that we didn't need more tears and manipulative displays of hopelessness. We needed to see who Valen and Pungari were as people, not just representations for the problems that plagued Kurunjimale. But I believe that the director used the embodiment of these two characters to portray the Kafkaesque bureaucracies that citizens that reside in similar dwellings and environments have to traverse. The characters are representations of a specific demographic, but the issues faced by them are not only pertinent to them, but to many lower social classes in India. The narrative highlights the ever-winding red tape that citizens who don't conform to these ill-informed government rules or orders are subjected as second-class citizens and essentially are subjected to second-class treatments, and they're basically denied the basic rights that other citizens possess.
I agree on both accounts. This film was certainly making a statement regarding the conflict of nature versus the human desire to destroy it. On the whole, we're a stupid species, and this was highlighted by the officials throughout the film as a representative group of authorities and people with corrupt self-interest. But by the same token, I agree this film did miss some major thematic opportunities which it had appeared to set up within its own narrative and then simply abandoned, and that was actually a little bit surprising to me.
Interesting. I want to come back to these missed major opportunities in a bit, but one can definitely argue that yes, the government is doing the right thing by allowing these communities to be better integrated into local communities. Look, they want to provide services such as houses, sanitation, and education for their children, and these at face value are all great initiatives. But often governments don't realize that such initiatives cannot be a cookie-cutter approach where one size fits all. You really have to take an ethnographic standpoint and understand the subjects that your policies will affect. The film reminded me of what the British did to the indigenous population of Australia, thinking that they know better than the people who have cultivated the land for eons prior to their arrival. And essentially, this type of arrogant governing leads to the severe socio-economic impacts on the entire indigenous population.
Look, I personally don't care what I urge about the human impact on humans, because at the end of the day, one has to ask what the rationale for these changes are. What is the end goal? And this is what was a clear question for me in this film. Was it bringing the mountain community down to build them up in some ill-informed way? Or was it simply bringing them down for other reasons under the guise of helping them, ultimately resulting in them being down in every sense of the word? Now, you could pick pretty much any modern do-gooding topic of today, and in 100 years, the opinions could and likely will be wildly different. After all, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. However, what has an impact far beyond the arrogance of humanity so far as its own social self-interest is the impact those same changes have on the natural world. And for me, that is a far more important theme in this film, and the individuals were representative of this greater issue in a somewhat more subtle and perhaps less well-played-out way, but of greater significance, in my opinion.
Okay, but look, I think the officials did want them to flourish, but there was an angle of where they wanted to sort of, and now that they've taken these people off their land, they can use that land for other economic development purposes, or that's what they claimed to be doing. You know, I guess that was all subtext.
But that's exactly my point, though. They wanted the people to come down, but I think at the end of the day, it was for their own self-interest, not really for the interest of the people in terms of coming down from the mountain to be better integrated in society, because one could argue, well, whose metric is the measure of the fact that being down off the side of the mountain is better for them? And I think that's really what was a key part of this, and comes back to your argument about the British versus the Native Australians. It was that the opinions of one doesn't necessarily align with the reality of another.
That's right. And I think that's what Bell was saying to them, like when they came up and had that meeting at the top of the hill. He was saying, look, this is how we've lived all this time. We're content with our lives. This mountain and this environment actually provides us with everything that we need. And we're basically living in a self-contained ecosystem for our needs. So we don't really need the houses and the sanitary measures that you provide at the bottom of the hill, because we're happy as we are.
Exactly. And I think if you look at societies or even humanity on the whole as a species, we survived a hell of a lot longer and far more efficiently as the likes of the mountain community than we ever have in cities. And we know going forward that that's just not sustainable anyway. So again, it comes down to agendas.
That's right. And this is exactly what my second gripe is, that under the guise of betterment, there's this hidden agenda of recuperating natural resources for exports, business and corporate profits, while the land and the culture that has been preserved over centuries by these communities, within a fraction of a time, it gets destroyed, or it will get destroyed. Trees and nature takes years to cultivate and grow, but only minutes to destroy. And this example is not only pertinent to India, but also other countries like Brazil, where President Bolsonaro has given contracts to destroy massive portions of the Amazon. And as our Earth's natural carbon sink, you know, we're about to reach a critical point of no return.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was alluding to.
So with that being said, Save, let's briefly discuss what we thought about the actors who portrayed the two main roles, Abhirami and Tarun Kumar, who played Pungori and Velan respectively. Look, I believe that this was their first roles, but they were able to convey the nuances and emotions of characters. And in my personal opinion, I think they did a magnificent job. And I would actually like to see them on screen for other roles in the future. Pungori's character was more assertive in the relationship at the start, but after they get married, she takes sort of a nurturing side to Vale, and they really complement each other really well, and their on-screen chemistry was actually rather beautiful. And Tarun Kumar actually had this humble appearance that, you know, just emanated someone who actually lived and was content with his surroundings. You know, we felt the pain of his loneliness, but he actually was someone who manifested passion for what he did. And he just loved his surroundings. And he was someone who had purpose in the way he led his life.
Mm. And I think it's worth mentioning too that Tarun Kumar has actually been in a number of things before, and I have to say I didn't mind either of them on screen, and I'm not going to pretend I was blown away by their acting prowess, and as with previous films, I would argue that there, at times it was a bit over dramatic, and for the love of Vishnu, please tone down the melodramatic nonsense. But that's not necessarily on the actors, that's something that's more to do with the way it's directed and a stylistic choice. So I'm not going to hold that against them either. But on the whole, I found the portrayals of their respective characters to be natural and sufficiently engaging and of a standard that made watching the film an overall enjoyable enough experience, because as you say, the characters did have this sort of humble, natural tendency to them that you very much felt like you were watching people of this community. And I think that really captured the essence of their characters quite well.
Mm, yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that Tarun Kumar was actually in other films. I might have to sort of check them out. But yeah, you're right. The on-screen chemistry was great, and I wouldn't mind seeing them again. Look, it is early days for the acting career, so maybe they can refine what they bring to the screen, but I still would like to see what they have to offer. And now this film, Save, is layered with some themes and meanings. So let's break down what we saw and what we thought about these like themes. And I want to start off by introducing the name of the film, which is Thane, and the English translation is honey. And it's used to represent both the benefits of the raw, unprocessed honey and the primary livelihood of the people from that community. The first two acts of the film are really sweet, and we get to witness the romance of the blossoming family, but all good things eventually have to come to an end. And in the third act, the honey is sort of used as a bribery tool to aid Velu's persuasion with the authorities to sort of allow them to take pity on him and push his paperwork forward.
Yeah, but I think the theme or message of the honey actually might even go further than that. That was that honey was Velu's means of subsistence. That's how he survived.
Mm.
And it was essentially all he had in the world, but it was all he needed.
Yeah.
Whether it was to support him in his village, whether it was to help people in his community, or whether it was to help him bribe others to help his own family. All of it stemmed from the fact that this arguably very poor, isolated community had nothing to offer but honey, but that what they did have to offer was sufficient enough to actually help them all get by in life. And that it wasn't about consumerism, but it was the simple fact that nature provided everything they ever needed. Everything else was superfluous and actually got in the way of it. And I think that was where honey had so much more power, because honey was, in a sense, a way of life, a way of living, and a way to support yourself. And it's such a simple thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you did expand on that, Safe, because you're absolutely right. It is something pure. It is something that he needed. And eventually he had to leave all that behind to pursue the other thing that he loved in this world, which was his wife and his family, essentially.
Mm.
Now, There is a touching scene in the first act where Belu comes to Pongoti's house and helps her dad with the medicinal honey, and we see him touch the base of his tongue and apply it all over his mouth. Now, obviously, nowadays, infection control with COVID is something that a lot of us keep at the forefront of our minds, but it was just touching for me to sort of see that bond between kinsmen and someone who he doesn't know. He's a stranger, but he knows that he's part of this mountainous community, and for him, everyone essentially is family. And it was just something that was, it was small, but I did notice it.
I think if you look at that with a modern lens, though, it's another thing that's almost a laughable aspect of the modern so-called civilized world. For millennia, humanity has survived by interacting with itself, touching, home remedies, all sorts of things. It's only sort of in recent times that we've all got bent out of shape about this coronavirus and suddenly trying to change the ways that we behave. But I think the thing is that the behaviors that we've enacted upon for millennia, as I said, they'll come back around, they'll come full circle. And I think it was just another one of those elements that sort of highlighted the absurdity of the modern world. And that you have a man that, irrespective of whether, you know, it's infectious not to touch someone's tongue, he gave him a simple home remedy that solved his ailments, as opposed to the modern world where they go to hospitals, it's a complete farce, you wait, you lie on the floor, you have to pay bribes, all this sort of nonsense. And so I think it worked at a much higher level to sort of speak to that juxtaposition and absurdity of the traditional world versus the modern world, which for all intents and purposes is probably far inferior in reality.
And I'm glad you brought up the corruption that we see in this film, because that's actually the next theme that I wanted to discuss. I'm going to let you take this one away.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess corruption sort of is shown at all levels, essentially, in this film. And it's about the self-interest of the masses and how they're all along for bribes and the hypocrisy of those who don't necessarily practice what they preach. And this is whether it's the doctors or the officials on television. And there's also those who seem to support the poor, but then take advantage of the situation when it suits them. And we saw this in the individual that tried to help Pongoti and then took a case full of money to be silenced. And I think this film sort of sets up the average Indian as self-serving, selfish, neglectful, arrogant, and spiteful. And it's taking a swipe at modern India, though, and its culture of neglect and self-interest, as opposed to the traditional values of that culture, which were very much about looking after those in your community. And we saw this in the man that helped Velu to actually engage and navigate his way through this corrupt modern society. But I think it really did speak to the fact that everybody has become so caught up on bettering themselves at the expense of everyone else.
Yeah, mate, you're so spot on with this. And like, we do see corruption at all levels. And it's sad that we see it even at the level of the doctor that his own community has recommended him to sort of go and see, who for the most part does sort of help him, but even at a certain point lets his ego and self-interest take over and he shuns him out the door. Now, we've already briefly touched on this prior, but I just want to mention again, there is the theme of gentrification. And usually when we think of gentrification, it's usually one particular demographic trying to sort of take over another demographic or race. But in this particular case, it's one affluent community trying to take over a less affluent or educated community. And it's sort of sad in a way, because it's all self-serving, it's very selfish, and it's pure profit driven. And it actually highlights the lack of regulations in India, and I'm sure in other places, that aren't there to preserve historic and national land.
And I think in terms of the theme of gentrification, it's not even just about different races and whatnot. This is purely social gentrification.
Yeah.
This comes at the levels of the affluent within the society, the same people, the same communities, basically trying to stamp out the other ones for their own self-interest.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very different type of gentrification, because at a certain level, it's social cannibalism, because you're not trying to push out something that is not fitting in your culture. You are trying to push out your own culture and, I guess, negate where your own people came from. And I think that's a very dangerous thing, because when a country starts to turn on itself socially in such a way, it can't help but collapse on itself, because it erodes the foundation stones that actually built it to become what it is now.
Yeah. Now, before I mention the doctors and how they want to sort of line their own pockets, and it's all very self-serving, and this once again highlights the flaws in the Indian medical system or the healthcare system itself. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I guess at its root level, this is another sort of example of social cannibalism and eroding your own societal structures. And it's the corrupt medical practices preying on the vulnerable. And, you know, this film went beyond just corrupt police and government officials, as so many Indian films do, and instead placed greater emphasis on the degeneration of society on the whole, and how everyone was out to look after only themselves in this modern world. And when you have people in positions of caregiving, such as doctors, it's very sad to see that they are the people who essentially are instrumental in ensuring that some of the poorer classes are kept down or actually exterminated, as is effectively the net result if you fail to look after them and allow them to die. And they are, I would argue, complicit in more than just a self-interest way, because it is resulting in the death of others for the interests of others. For example, this community, if they all got sick from lead poisoning and the doctors all allowed them to die and the others kept taking bribes from companies to stay hushed, ultimately the officials that want this village and this land will get what they want. But they're not the ones with the blood on their hands. That's the caregivers like the doctors who should be looking after the people, because that is their sworn duty.
Yeah, and you're right, because there's no sense of escalation in this community, or because this is not the first case of lead poisoning. This is probably the third or fourth case that the doctor mentioned. So, especially after the first one, I guess the Hippocratic Oath, it's not just pertinent to, you know, healthcare within a hospital, but public health in general, where, you know, you should go beyond the scope of a building to provide that care. And if this is becoming a systemic problem for a community, then red flags should have been raised, and they weren't. And that's just completely unacceptable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, say, now this film was a very beautifully shot film with some great epic visuals. What did you think about the cinematography?
I agree with you completely. I think this was an astoundingly beautiful film. It had some very beautiful shots. And as I've said in some of our Indian podcasts, it helps the fact that the land itself, India, is beautiful in its own right. So it lends itself to this spectacular footage when done well. There was a couple little issues with me that were probably more about editing. Yeah, there's some continuity stuff about when they went home. And this relates back to the sort of medical scenes we've just been talking about, because we saw him talk to the stall owner outside the hospital, but there was this transition back to the village, which was quite abrupt, and it lacked any obvious motivation until they'd returned later in the film when the doctor sort of berated them for leaving. And I did find myself a little bit lost as to what had actually happened there, because I felt like part of the film was actually missing. But again, on the whole, I think this was a very well tied together film, and it was very pretty, and it was quite engaging, if for no other reason than the sheer beauty of it.
India is a beautiful place, and this film did portray some really great band shots of the location and different perspective angles on Pungani's house and even Bela's residence, and even as he's climbing the tree at the forefront of the waterfall background. It was just stunning. But with that being said, Zabe, shall we wrap this film up?
Yeah, so oddly enough, this was a film which I expected to go for considerably longer, actually. I'm glad that it didn't, but there were a number of themes I expected to be played out which never were, and that was intriguing given they were so prominent throughout the film, most glaring of which was the fact that the film kept seeking to destroy the mountain village and bring the people into the valley, and we even had the village signed away by the main protagonist in order to get his wife's healthcare, and yet it never eventuated on screen that he should lose his village. So too, the theme of corruption and environmentalism, it kept touching on it, but never actually did anything substantial with it. And that was a shame when the film was arguing at some level which form of society is more civilized, and in my opinion, it's the mountain dwellers, and not the disgusting modern swill. But on the whole, I think it was a film that captured a whole raft of nice themes, and even if it didn't hit all the narrative points I'd hoped for, I certainly found it to be a complete enough little package. So I'm going to give this film a 6.7 out of 10.
I can certainly see where you're coming from, Zabe, and at times it did feel like this film is stacking metaphors on top of each other, but in my opinion, the film is sort of designed for the audience to feel the plight of those who are not exposed to the dealings of bureaucrats, to feel the impact of industrial pollution at a human level, and to feel the impact of the mute child begging for money as she's drawn the parallels that her parents' plight is due to not having enough wealth. And finally, the audience is made to feel the agony of carrying one's deceased wife all the way back up home, where they feel like they have a sense of peace, respect, and belonging. At the nucleus of this film is the central theme of an emerging civilization versus the natural surrounding world, and Ganesh Vinayak makes a potent argument for the conservation of our natural world and subtext the global and societal impacts that ignoring these warnings will have. And it's for these reasons I give the film a 7.3 out of 10.
Great. Great. And that's it from us again, folks. And remember, you can let all of us know what films you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on any of our socials. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed yet another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye from us.
This is the first episode of Season 3, guys. We hope you enjoyed it. We have many more great films coming your way. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. We'll see you all next week.